A very good morning to you, my dear listeners. Very good morning to you, Namibia. And it's a Monday morning. How was your weekend? So hopefully it was a restful one, not the one that make your Monday morning blue. Hopefully it's not a blue Monday for you this morning. So good morning. It's the 11th of the month of August. And it's a Monday morning, and the year is 2025. So welcome to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveli, and this is your daily dose of what is really going on in business, economic, and politics. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make
from
sense
sunrise
of
to supper
stories,
time. Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with
so
care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
So Namib Mills, proudly Namibian,
passionately feeding the nation. Namib Mills,
feeding the nation. So welcome back. Our time is about 8 o'clock, and you tune into Unpacking the Day. So let's get into our first segment. Today is the 11th of August. Let's get into our first segment of Unpacking the Day, which is: what happened on this day in Africa? On this day in Africa, what happened? So, on the 11th of August in 1960, that marks the day Chad declared independence from France, becoming a sovereign nation. So, its first president was François Toba Baye. So he was the first president after independence. And on August 11th in 1904, the Battle of Waterberg took place in German Southwest Africa, today's Namibia. So it was the decisive confrontation in the Herero Wars, resulting in the defeat of the Herero. So this event is now commemorated annually as a Heroes Day in Namibia. So, and on August 11, 1982, the UN Special Committee Against Apartheid launched the International Year of Mobilization for Sanctions Against South Africa, escalating global effort to oppose the apartheid regime. And on August the 11th in 1963, four ANC political detainees escaped from Pretoria Central Prison, representing a symbolic act of resistance within the anti-apartheid struggle. So, and on the 11th of August 1998, saw Yasser Arafat, leader of the PLO, and the Palestine National Authority, arrived in Cape Town for a state visit at the invitation of President Nelson Mandela. So the meeting symbolized solidarity between the Palestinian struggle and South African anti-apartheid legacy. So that's all what we have. Some of the significant events that happened in Africa on this day, the 11th of August. So, all right, so let's get to our thought of the day. And the 11th of August, the Monday, the 11th of August. What is the thought for the day? So if a donkey kicks you and you kick him back, you both become donkeys. If a donkey kicks you, and you kick him back, you both become donkeys. So the proverb warns against responding to negativity or hostility with the same negativity. So if someone wrongs you, reacting with vengeance doesn't elevate you. So instead, actually, it brings you down to their level. So the moment you retaliate, you relinquish self-control and allow another's poor behavior to dictate your own, making you what you despise. So the best response to a wrongdoing is to move on and let go of anger. So preserving your dignity, your integrity, and peace of mind. That's the most important. So preserving your integrity and peace of mind. So our thought for the day, if a donkey kicks you and you kick back and you kick him back, you both becomes a donkey. You both becomes donkeys. So make sure that the choices you make today and the decision you make is not the one that make you kick him back. It's not the one that make you a donkey as well. So make the right choice, which help you to preserve your integrity and peace of mind. So that's our thought of the day. So, all right. And thanks for joining us. You are tuned into Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And I'm your host, Michael Chiavelli. So when we come back, what we can expect? What do you ask? What can we expect today on the show before we come back? So today on the show, at 8:30, we will be having a guest on the show, and we will talk about why Namibia's marine law remain a mystery. If you want to find out what that's all about, make sure that you tune in on at 8:30. We will have Mr. Mr. Graham Hopwood, the executive director of IPPR. So make sure that you tune in at that time at 8:30. Why Namibia's marine law remain a mystery. And if we got time, we also look at Dampmarine. Dampmarine is actually seeking U.S. tariff exemption for Namibian diamonds. And why is that? So that's what we're going to look at. And if we have time, we're also looking at the cabinet approve a tough penalty to curb fisheries bay catch. So those are stories that we have on the show this morning, and make sure that you stay tuned for those stories. So when we come back, we get into our first stories. So stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed. To
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omotiha, we take it off a guna, e matina, omjo. Chicago Safatana, nana, longish fa, ya, as you can wash you wanna. E moyao, or tango got it some money. Anagashi fa, ya Namibia, on bitom banawa, or jika. Seithanina, omeguro, nidanitoma, yue, yongeshi fa, yue, kupitira, mo, Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe 20 team, meha, uka kombanga nina. Kara onkwashi paregi, we mopo, yo mo program. Betu moambo dengira selma kona rahe tatuimu datu ndatu heari hamano tano o aliyaj Eagle FM the eye.
A very good morning to you. If you're just joining us, welcome to Unpacking the Day and the show where we look past the headlines and get the heart and get to the heart of the stories that affect you. And welcome. I'm your host, Mike Oshabeli. I will be with you until the hour of 10 o'clock. So just to remind you again that our time has changed a little bit. Now we start at 8 o'clock, ending at 10 o'clock. So from now, we still have plenty of time to cover the things that we plan to do this morning. Okay, we all know that diamonds are Namibia's best friend. They call it Namibia. Now, diamond is whose best friend? Is it woman's best friend? Well, it's also Namibia's best friend. So they are cornerstones of our economy. And for many, many, many years, the diamond, our own diamond that we scoop from our own sea floors, have helped build our nation. Now, but what happened? So what happened when that best friend get in trouble? What happened if that best friend actually got in trouble? Now, there was something big. There were some big news coming out of the mining expo in Windhoek last week. Debmarine, the giant of our diamond industry, has a serious, serious problem. And that problem has a name. The United States of America. So that's the problem. So the problem of Debmarine is the United States of America. So in simple terms, the U.S. has slapped, as usual, has slapped a tax on our diamond. Do you mean the tariff that was slapped on Namibia? So, well, definitely it's hitting in our pocket. So U.S. has slapped a tax on our diamond, and now the Debmarine, along with our government, is planning to go to Washington to ask them very politely to say, please remove it. So that's what they are planning. They're planning to go to Washington and said, and ask U.S. very politely and said, please, can you remove this 15% tariff? So now you might hear, or you might think, and you hear that and think, okay, a tax issue between a big company and a foreign government, what does that have to do with me? Well, it has everything to do with you, my friend. It has everything to do with you. It has to do with your job. It has to do with the jobs in Lodritz, in Orangemond, in where do we get diamond again? Not that sign of Wabish Bay? No, I'm not too sure. So it has to do with the money that flow into our government's pocket. And then what does that money do? That money pays for schools. You know, like we're talking about university education. So that's the money that goes there. It pays the hospitals as we have problems. You know that we have problems of medicines in most of our medical centers. So it has to do with Namibians' entire strategies to stop just shipping away our raw materials and start creating value right here at home. It has to do with all this. So the big question we are unpacking today is this. Why is the U.S. government making our diamond more expensive? And can Namibia fight this? Can we win this fight? So we said we go to Washington and say, hey, please remove it. Remove this tariff. So can we win this fight? Well, stick with me. And we are going to unpack this. So right after this, don't go away.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So welcome back. So welcome back to Unpacking the Day. So we are talking about the new U.S. tariff attacks on Namibian diamonds. So let's get into the nuts and bolts, as they say, and what is exactly happening here. So let's, and my dear listeners, I have my whole nose actually blocked up, so my voice might be sound a bit totally different today. So yes, my both nose, I'm breathing through the mouth that I'm talking through. It's so much difficult. So yeah. Now, what is actually happening? What is actually happened here? So what happened, what is happening to our diamond? What is happening to our diamonds? So the Debmarine CEO explained that, any polished Namibian diamond entering the US market now get hit with the 15% tariff, and it instantly becomes 15% more expensive for the American customers. So we talked about this sometimes, not only the diamond, but we talk about any of our product that goes to the state. Now, for years, Namibia has been talking about beneficiation. You understand that we have been talking about beneficiation. Now, it is a big word that we currently, you know, throw around, but it means something simple. It just means that let's cut and polish our diamonds right here at home. Let's create skilled jobs for Namibians and keep more of the money in our country. That's basically what it means. Now you have to listen to this. So the head of Debmarine revealed that if we sent our rough diamond, to a country like, for example, India, to be processed, because that's where India or Belgium, so which is common in this industry. So, and then it goes to the US, that tariff jumps now to a massive 25%. So do you see what is happening? Do you see what is happening? So the American policy is actively pushing, it's actually punishing us. So it makes our diamond more expensive no matter what, but makes them even more expensive if they are processed outside Namibia. So no matter what we do, we are punished. So, and it creates incredible uncertainty. You know, one minute it is 15%, the next it could be 30%. And how can anyone really plan a business around that uncertainty, around that? So now my first question, or my another question, is why? The reasons why I'm asking this, because the article also mentioned a U.S. executive order. It mentioned that it's a U.S. executive order, but let's challenge that. Okay. Let's a bit challenge that. So the U.S. does not have its own diamond mining industry to protect. So it doesn't. So this is not like them taxing foreign cars to, let's say, to help Ford or General Motors. So this tariff is not protecting American job. It doesn't. So what is the agenda here? So is Namibia just collateral damage in a bigger trade, you know, trade war that US have maybe with some other, you know, powerhouse? Is this connected to the G7, G7's effort to trace Russia diamonds, or our products are getting caught in a net that was designed maybe for someone else? Those are some of questions, because now, but it's a question our leader needs to be asking. Is this just mindless bureaucracy, or is there a bigger political game at play here? So because right now, this policy is directly threatening one of Namibia's most important national goals. And you know that it is a direct blow to our dream of beneficiation. So even if we're talking about it, beneficiation, and this is the problem. So that is actually threatening this, the idea of Namibia, you know, of our goal, one of our national goals of beneficiation. So we have to pay attention to that. So now let's dig into other challenges facing our diamond industry. So as I said, we are looking at the crisis facing our diamond sectors, especially a new 15% U.S. tariff. So now, a problem like this, you have to understand it doesn't happen in a vacuum. And for our diamond industry, it is like this tariff arrived in the middle of. It arrived in the middle of a hurricane. Yeah? We don't know. Yeah, that's the worst thing can happen in terms of what... It's like it's arriving in the middle of, let's say, a flood. I'm just trying to look for something that is more stronger than... Hurricane is much stronger. So the timing couldn't be worse, really. So when we're talking about now this 15% U.S. tariff, it comes in... And it find us in other bigger storm. Now, let's look at other storm clouds that were already gathering. All right. So especially in this sector, storm cloud number one. Okay. The global diamond prices are falling. So this 15% tariff comes at the time when also the global diamond prices are falling. Well, the article pointed out that Debmarine's earnings have gone so down. We are talking about a drop from nearly 7 billion just a few years ago to less than 1 billion now. That is honestly a massive, massive, massive hit to Debmarine's. So that's why I said, you know, when the diamond sector is facing other issues as well. So another storm, a storm cloud number two, I call them cloud, you know, storm cloud number two. There's also a rise of lab-grown diamonds. So the lab-grown diamond, these are synthetic stones, and they are actually getting cheaper and cheaper to make. And one of the article gives a stunning figure: the wholesale price for a lab-grown carat has dropped to around $114. But, and this is a huge but. So retailer are still actually selling them for up to, you know, $1,000. So you see, someone somewhere is making a massive, massive profit by marketing these factory made stone. These are made stone. These are not natural diamonds. So, and this is creating a confusion and directly eating away at the demand of demand for natural, like natural diamond, Namibian diamond. So you see, that's so now. So you have the falling prices of diamond, and now you have a fierce competition from synthetics. And then what happens? So then what happened? Here comes a storm cloud number three. So the U.S. tariff. So it's like kicking someone when they are already down, you know? When you're already down and they continue kicking you. So the impact is already being felt right at here at home. And Deb Marine has had to cut its production forecast. And they are talking, and they are taking two of their mining vessels of the service earlier. They have done that already. And when a company that big, scales back, what does that mean? So, of course, it means potential job losses. It means less tax, you know, less tax revenue for our country. It means less foreign currency coming in. So, and one article quotes an economist saying the impact might be limited, but limited for whom? Maybe it's limited in the grand scheme of the giant U.S. economy, but for a family in Caras, region whose livelihood actually depend on that mine, for our national budget, the impact is anything but limited. It is very, very, very real. So this is not just a corporate headache for Deb Marine. It is a Namibian headache. That is our headache. It's not just thinking, well, that's what Deb Marine is going through. That's what we are going through. So after all this, you know, the falling prices, the lab-grown threat, and now this American tax, what is the way forward? So what is now the way forward? So the Deb Marine, with the backing of our government, as I said earlier on, is going to Washington. Their argument seems pretty clear and frankly very logical also. So they will essentially say, America, you don't produce diamonds. This tax protect no one in your country. Yeah? It doesn't protect anyone in your country. So all it does is actually punish a stable democratic partner in Africa and hurt an industry that is vital to its people. Well, I'm just saying, probably see this, what could they would say in that line. So it's a strong case. In honesty, it's a strong case, but international politics is a tough game. And will they succeed? I don't know. We have to hope so. So, yeah, the company is doing what it can. I believe they are doing what they can. They are running a market campaign to promote our unique desert diamonds. They are using technology to prove a diamond's natural origin. So, which I said, they're doing their very best. But you can't market, you can't market your way out of a 15 tax, of 15 tariff. You know, you can't. And this is a barrier that must be removed at the political level. So now, for me, the real takeaway, from this story is how connected actually, and this is make me think how connected we are to the rest of the world. And this is for better or worse, like when you do, when you get married. Those who haven't married don't know this. For better or for worse, seriously. We are so connected to the rest of the world. So a decision made in an office in Washington, D.C., actually can threaten a job and stall a progress right here in Namibia, as we can see. So we have to start thinking globally. So it's really a reminder that our economic sovereignty is something we must constantly fight for. It's something that we need to constantly fight for. So this is not just about, we're talking about these shiny stones. It's about our ability to chart our cause, our own cause, you know, to build our own industries and actually to secure a prosperous future for all Namibians. So we definitely will be watching this story very, very closely. The outcome of this request for an exemption will tell us a lot about our relationship with the world's biggest economy. So stay tuned after this.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura minutes.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we have been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
All right, welcome back to Unpacking the Day, where we dive into stories shaping Namibia's and beyond. Yes, after the fish rot scandal rocked Namibia, unsettling questions still remain. What is going to stop it from happening all over again? The very law that created the shadows for corruption to thrive, the Marine Resources Act, is still largely untouched. Minister still holds sweeping powers to hand out fishing rights, and the true owners of many quarter holding companies remain hidden from public view. If the legal framework that enables one of our nation's biggest corruption scandals hasn't fundamentally changed, are we simply waiting for Fish Rot Season 2? The Institute for Public Policy Research, the IPPR, says this is an urgent crisis. They have released a new report calling for immediate and sweeping reform to bring transparency and accountability to one of Namibia's most valuable industries. To help us unpack why our fishery sector remains wrapped in secrecy and what can be done about it, we are joined by the Executive Director of the IPPR, Graham Hopwood. Good morning, Graham, and thank you so much for making the time to be with us this morning.
Yes, good morning to you and good morning to all the listeners.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. In simple terms, what is the biggest problem with the Marine Resource Act as it stands today?
So the Marine Resources Act was passed in 2000, then later on was amended in 2015.
Mm.
And the essential problem, I think, relating to fish rot is that the powers of the minister in terms of his discretion to allocate rights and quotas were very broad.
Mm.
and really no checks, controls or balances in the system. This is part of the court case, of course, but the quotas that for horse mackerel in the fish rot case were diverted through various means to Samheri, the Icelandic company, which was kind of the at the heart of the corruption. And what happened, it seems, allegedly, is that the minister, through these amendments, which nobody questioned at the time, made things a lot easier for him to control and allocate and, in this case, divert the quotas. So the essential point, which when Minister Albert Akwana took over, when Sakhi Shangala and Bernard Esso were arrested and resigned, he did say early in 2020, we recognize there's problems with the law, and we need to remedy these, and we need to make changes.
Yeah.
And subsequently, we were expecting and hoping that more amendments or substantial changes to the law would come through the National Assembly, but nothing happened. And then ultimately, we had a different minister, Derek Claassen, and the ministry as a whole just reverted to the line that there's nothing really wrong with the Marine Resources Act, and we're not going to change it. We're not going to do what Minister Kawana said initially. So what happened, I believe, is that, they realized that they have been utilizing this law to privilege not just companies like Samheri, but lots of other companies, and they didn't want anybody to interfere in that
system.
And also they don't, the other part of this, which is can be addressed through the Resources Act and also other changes, is to just open up the whole sector, because there's a whole as you alluded to, there's so much secrecy in the fisheries sector that the law needs to just say you have to publish a lot of this information about who has the rights, who has the quotas, and so on. So, yes, it's the ministerial discretion combined with the secrecy that are the fundamental problems.
Yeah. I'll come to secrecy later on. Why is it, in your opinion, why is it so risky for one individual to have so much personal control over national resources like our fish?
It's the same, with any of our resources, that these are hugely valuable resources for Namibia that should be used to benefit the whole of Namibia and all of its citizens. And therefore, to have one person who could divert these resources and the allocation to certain groups or certain individuals or certain companies that might, for example, be connected to the minister in some way, maybe politically, maybe personally.
Mm.
You just need to rule out that possibility. And you can do that legally by having a system which is a bit more bureaucratic and maybe a little bit more time-consuming, but involves probably a committee and somebody in a position or another committee able to check things. in a way, this is what we've done in the procurement system, and I know some people don't like it, but it slows things down.
Yeah.
But to try and make things not in the domain of one individual or a very small group of people who could act together like a cabal, but to actually have a system where there are checks and balances so that you reduce the possibilities of corruption. That's what we don't have in the fishing industry at the moment.
Yeah, and the fish rod scandal really exposed that deep corruption. So how did the current weaknesses in the Marine Resources Act help make a scandal of that scale possible?
Well, primarily because I don't go into too much detail here because it's still before the court, but
yeah.
The allegation is that the minister diverted all the quotas that he could have influence on in terms of horse mackerel, including the quotas that were supposed to go to, or did go to, Fish Corps, but eventually went to Sam Harry. So, you know, basically he had the power, without anybody questioning him, to just institute these decisions. And as I say, it was a fault on all our parts that the rest of government, the MPs, the media, civil society, we weren't sharp enough at that point in 2015 to say, look, this is actually a real vulnerability in the law that could be exploited for corrupt ends. And we also ignored international best practice at that point, which now points towards the idea that you've got to have a sort of diverse system of decision making, which isn't solely in the hands of one individual. So, you know, that's how it happened, basically. But of course, we don't know if there are other fish hots because of the amount of secrecy.
Yeah,
there could be, and maybe not on the scale of the fish what we know about, but there could be other scandals about the way these resources have been allocated, and because we're not very aware, because, you know, fish hot really only came to our awareness because of the involvement of some foreign media like Al Jazeera. Namibian local media were working on the issue and knew something was wrong, but they hadn't got to the heart of it. And it was only the whistleblower and Al Jazeera and the Icelandic media, as well as the Namibian media eventually, that brought that into the open. So, you know, we all have to do a better job, I think. But the first step, at least for us as a public policy think tank, is to say, look, we've got to just address the laws. And now, why has it gone on now for, we're now 6 years beyond the revelations of fish rot?
Yeah.
Why do we still have this law untouched, even though opposition and even SWAPO politicians have called for its reform? And what we're just hoping, with the new president being very strong on her, you know, her rhetoric against corruption, that this will translate into these kind of actions where these changes to the law will be prioritized, and we'll remove at least some of the risk of corruption in the fishing industry.
Yeah. You have used the strong phrase that secrecy has defiled the industry. So what does that mean for an average Namibian who isn't maybe involved in fishing? So that defiled the industry. What do you mean by that?
Well, when we launched this paper, it's actually 2 years old, the paper that you mentioned. It's not a new paper, but it hasn't changed. It's still relevant. We used a quote by a former U.S. President, Woodrow Wilson. Everybody knows that corruption thrives in secret places and avoids public places, and we believe it's a fair presumption that secrecy means impropriety. So basically, you know, when you have secrecy in government around public resources that are supposed to be for the benefit of the Namibian people, it's probably an indication that something bad is happening, probably corruption. And you need to cast a light on that and shine a light on it and expose what that is about. So, you know, for us, if you look at the Ministry of Fisheries website, which still exists, even though it's now a merged ministry.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed for years, really, and it has no proper information in terms of who has the rights, who has the quotas.
Yeah,
you know, how exactly are the total allowable catches decided on, and you know, all that information that should be in the public domain is not there.
Yeah.
So if we don't know regularly, you know, it's not published who is getting the rights and who is getting the quotas, then we're just in the dark, and all kinds of things could be going on and we're not aware.
Mm.
We just discovered, this is a little bit bizarre, that there is a regulation attached to the Marine Resources Act, which says that members of the public can go to the ministry and inspect a public register
mm.
of rights and quota holders, but it can only be done on Thursday afternoons between 2:30 and 5 o'clock. So we're going to test that out, but generally, I mean, you know, there isn't any serious public access to information here about something that is a public resource. And to be fair, you know, some a minister like the Ministry of Mines and Energy, and our Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, does publish a lot more information, maybe not everything we'd want, but, you know, about which companies have exploration licenses, which companies have mining licenses and so on.
Mm.
So, you know, it's fisheries that is the real problem here. So we just desperately need to open that up. And the one hope on the horizon, although it's taken an awful long time to come, is the Access to Information Act.
Yeah.
Which is very slowly inching towards becoming operationalized. We seem to be moving towards appointing an Access to Information Commissioner in the latter part of this year.
Mm.
If that comes through, that law says that all this public information should be proactively published and made available by the government.
Yeah.
Which means that proactive, you know, it's not waiting for Eagle FM or IVPR to call the ministry and say we'd like to know or yeah. write a letter to the ED. It has to be made publicly available, presumably on their websites.
Mm.
And that will be the law. So the change is coming, albeit slowly, but we need that desperately, and it shouldn't really be down to the public to have to pressurize for this. As it yeah. should be proactively available. It should be automatically yeah. available.
And since the amendment, why is it still so difficult to find out who really owns the companies that hold the fishing rights and quotas?
So one can, you know, there are unofficial lists. I think that, you know, of companies that have different quotas that have been floating around over the years, and that most of the companies are pretty obscure. You wouldn't have heard of them.
Mm.
I mean, we know some of the bigger companies, obviously, and they are acting in the public. And you know, we know that they try to do, you know, their businesses, but they have offices, they have hopefully fishing factories, they have vessels, and so on.
Yeah.
Many of these companies don't. They seem to have been set up to gain rights and quotas, but then sell them on to a more capable company that can actually deliver at vast profit for certain individuals who we don't really know who they are. So allied to finding out what these companies are, we also need to look at who owns them. And that takes us to BIPA, the Business Intellectual Property Authority. Now, BIPA is supposed to have a register of all the companies in the country. They're in a bit of a mess. They need to do things a lot better. That's partly why we ended up being grey-listed. But in theory, anybody, whether it's a journalist or a researcher or just a member of the public, can go and try and find out
yeah.
at least who the directors of these companies are. Now, we were also pushing for what's known as a beneficial ownership, to have the information on who the beneficial owners of companies are,
yeah.
which is now becoming a global standard to publish this information. But and the beneficial owner is the real owner. You know, that you can't have a proxy or a front person. You have to reveal in your company documents who really owns the company. Unfortunately, BIPA has taken its decision in the last months or so to make the beneficial ownership part of the register of the terms of the company documents
mm.
a secret. So again, battling secrecy. So obviously what happens when you push on these issues and you start to get information about beneficial owners
yeah.
is that the corrupt fight back, and they must have probably, through their lawyers, put pressure on BIPA to hide this information again. So it's now impossible to get the details of beneficial owners in Namibia, which kind of makes the whole system pointless in a way, at least from the public accountability point of view. So, you know, we still have a whole load of problems with secrecy and lack of access to information in Namibia, which are vital weapons we can use in the fight against corruption. If we can just get the government primarily to open up and to agree that this is important.
Yeah. So this beneficial ownership, why is that specific detail known, knowing the real owner, so important?
Because it means that, for example, that a politician who owns a fishing company can't put his sort of cousin or nephew who has a different surname or whatever on the list as the main director of the company. Because legally you're not allowed to do that. If it can be shown that the company actually in reality is with the minister or with the politician, then you know that we can prove that there is corruption. Or and really, if people know that beneficial ownership is information is going to be out there, it serves as a deterrent. Ministers and politicians and other connected people won't be seeking to abuse the system, we hope. That's the way it should work. But we're not nowhere near that at the moment in Namibia. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do in this area.
Yeah.
We are grey-listed by this Financial Action Task Force, probably at least until sometime next year, because we're still working to make all the reforms necessary. And well, we believe that we need part of this is just taking the political decision just to be a lot more open about these issues.
Your report also offers some solution, and let's talk about the Fisheries Transparency Initiative, the FITI. What is it, and how would Namibia actually? I mean, how would joining help Namibia?
So we've, in general, in relation to the extractive industries transparency, we've been saying that Namibia should join the EITI, which is the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, which covers basically mining, oil, and gas, that we actually, you know, had that in the Harambe 2. That was part of one of the objectives, which wasn't achieved. But as part of that, in relation to fisheries, there is actually a separate fisheries transparency initiative, which is similar to the EITI. It's called the FITI or the FITI.
Yeah.
And basically, it says what we think largely would help us to tackle and keep corruption out of the fishing industry, which is, would be a, publishing a public registry of all the laws, regulations, and documents, all the agreements around fishing, including the information on quotas and who gets the rights, all the information on the foreign fishing companies that are involved as well, all the publication of the reports on the state of the fish stocks, information about the vessels. So all of this information should be in the public domain, really, and that's the sort of highest standard, really. The other aspect of these EITI and FITI is that they involve multi-stakeholder participation, meaning that the oversight to make sure the companies and the government are publishing all this information results with like a large committee that it consists of the government, of the private sector, and of civil society. And together, that they can make sure and hold to account all the different parts of this, so that they all this information is published in the public domain. So we do think government should consider EITI and FITI. And you know, some people say, well, you know, why do we have to conform with these international standards? Well, they're generally accepted as being the most useful ways of promoting openness and transparency. So we should go along with them. And also, if we join them, it means we wouldn't have to wait years, as we are doing now, for amendments to the laws, because it's like a club that you join with certain rules, and you have to accede to the rules if you want to stay in the club. Mm. Which means, and the rules in this case are just publishing a lot of information about the companies, who how they operate, what revenues they make, what profits they make, what taxes they pay. All this kind of information, which is very hard to find unless the company itself is very open, which many aren't, of course.
So
there's a whole load of advantages from following EITI standards and FITI standards.
Yeah. So the report also highlights the Whistleblowers and Witness Protection Act. So why are these two laws so critical for cleaning up, if we can say, for cleaning up the fishing in, for the fishing sector specifically?
Well, they are, you know, generally important for fighting crime, wrongdoing and corruption, and that applies to fisheries and other sectors. We have the Whistleblower Law, Whistleblower Protection Act that was passed in 2017 by Parliament, has been sitting there now, where are we now, 8 years on. Just passed its 8th anniversary, I think, of being passed. And nothing has been done to implement it. Every year we ask, you know, the government, the Ministry of Finance, is there anything happening? Are you going to allocate money? All that's happened in that period is there's been some move to operationalize the witness protection law, which is obviously really important and links together with the whistleblower law. So there is now some whistleblower protection, witness protection office set up or still in the process of being set up. But nothing has happened on whistleblower protection. And this, again, is like, really, it's at the end of the day, the only reason for such a long delay is that the elements of corruption and those who support them are delaying this. Because, you know, we know from the Sam Harry Fishwatch case that the whistleblower is absolutely crucial. In that case, the whistleblower came out in the public, and he's not protected by our laws because they're not in operation, the whistleblower protection law. But he's brave enough to have put out this information, and a lot of what he revealed led to the court case that we have now and the court case that we hope we'll have in Iceland. So the whistleblower is absolutely crucial in exposing corruption, but they do deserve protection, and we're not able to properly afford that and in terms of protecting them at the moment. So if we can get this in through, it will just help, again, to expose corruption, and we're not in that position at the moment.
You did challenge the private sector, saying they benefit from a dysfunctional system. So how are they benefiting from this lack of transparency, if we can call it that way?
Well, one of the problems is when the private sector feel that they that their fates are in the hands of a few politicians or a few officials, then they are in a sense a bit scared of the ministry. And they don't want to do anything that might offend the ministry. And therefore, in a way, I think the private sector have gone along with this dysfunctional system in the hope that they can just keep their companies afloat and keep going. So they are accepting the fact that these decisions are made in a non-transparent way, in the hope that they will just, they obviously need a flow of quotas to stay in operation. Otherwise, they close down or they temporarily suspend their activities. And obviously fishing is difficult because of the environmental conditions sometimes do mean that there are certain species, for example, we know the pilchard has been the big issue of late, you know, are either very low quotas or no quotas at all, no TACs, etc. So, you know, it's a difficult industry to operate in, but it need, but if it's operated in a, run in a very transparent way, then I think the companies would find it easier and would know where they stand in terms of quotas. At the moment, I think many of them have to make arrangements with these rather obscure companies that we don't know much about in order to be able to get some quotas in order to keep going. And that's just shouldn't be the way it is. We should really have a scorecard that is linked to the allocation of quotas. So all companies, you know, that are allocating quotas must be able to prove certain things, like that they are creating jobs for Namibians, that they have onshore facilities, that they do actually own the vessels to do the fishing. And we have to help the Namibian companies, and some of them have been successful, of course, to develop and gain these capacities so that they can make sure that they have access to quotas and don't have to deal with South African companies or Icelandic companies or Spanish companies.
Yeah.
If they do, then it's done in a very transparent way. But definitely, this would help with value addition, if we can make sure that the companies getting quotas are in a position to add value to the fishery resources that they are dealing with.
Yeah.
And also things like, they've got to have a good environmental record, they've got to have a good health and safety and labor standards, things like that. All these things can be applied to make sure that the companies that we are giving these quotas and rights to are the best kind of companies for Namibia.
Yeah, yeah. The government often speak about its commitment to transparency. So based on your research, are you seeing concrete action that matches these words?
Well, the short answer is no. There's been a lot of rhetoric going back right through the Garingob period to the Pahamba presidency, when President Pahamba said there would be a zero tolerance for corruption. Of course, within that period, the Fishrot scandal developed. So, the gap between the rhetoric and the reality has been very large. And we're hoping now with the minister, with the new president, that she, seems to have a more serious intent on a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And also on the anti-corruption issues. So if a government can also just see the logic of making the right legal changes, adopting the right international standards that are spelt out in conventions that we've signed up to, like the UN Convention Against Corruption, the African Union Convention, even the SADC Protocol on Corruption, we can really move forward. But it's got to be about much more than just saying you're against corruption, or even just saying that corruption is treason, which is a very strong statement, but it has to be backed up by action. And a lot of this is actually in the area that President Gangar used to talk about, the processes, systems, and institutions. Now, we feel that they weren't really ever properly reformed and implemented, but we still have to do that if we're going to make our fight against corruption not just linked to one political personality who has strong views, but is sustainable and is embedded in the way that our laws operate and our policies operate.
Yeah. So what is the long-term risk, if I may ask this way? So what is the long-term risk for Namibia's economy and maybe also our international reputation if we fail actually to reform this act?
Well, I do think it definitely affects the economy, because if you look at the fish rod, and we're also doing some research at the moment into the economic costs of fish rods, but we've done these reports on the plight of the fisheries workers who lost their jobs. Some of them worked with NAMSOV, whose quotas were taken away and given to Samheri. Others lost their jobs because they worked on the Samheri and its subsidiaries vessels, and then that all closed down. But, they really suffered. They've struggled to keep going in the period since then. So there's definitely a sort of human rights impact.
Yeah.
There's an economic impact. It's harder to measure, but there would definitely have been an economic impact on Walvis Bay, but also, I think, on the broader economy as well. But the way that fishing industry has been run at the moment, it just means that we are far more likely to have companies that are running into serious trouble. Even if they don't go bankrupt, they have to periodically lay off a lot of workers, furlough them so that they're not basically working on a day-to-day basis and so on. So it's just not the way to run an industry which is, a key contributor to the Namibian GDP and should be a main plank of our economy. So We need to do all this properly. And, I think, if we can get it going, the other aspect, I think we could also get a lot more money out of fisheries for the Treasury.
Yeah.
That's been shown by the fact that we've switched more now to auctions for, particularly for the governmental objective, part of the law. And, you know, since we've started organizing auctions properly, they have brought in a lot of, you know, millions and millions of dollars into the Treasury.
Mm.
And, you know, that shows the value of the fishing industry, which we haven't really exploited properly in terms of making sure that the companies do get the quotas, but also pay properly for the quotas. And if we can find a system of doing that more effectively, it may partly be auctions and maybe other ways of doing it.
Yeah.
We can also gain a lot of more income and more revenue for the Treasury and so on. So, yeah, all these aspects need to be looked at in a holistic way in order to reform the fishing industry and the relevant laws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your report for sure really paint a concerning picture. But despite the challenges, do you feel hopeful? Do you feel hopeful for the future of Namibia's fishing industry?
Well, not a lot at the moment, but I'm hopeful about Namibia in general. I mean, I think, you know, we are in a world where democratic standards are tended to be in decline. I think Namibia is still holding out as a democracy. We still have a media that, you know, we have one of the freest media environments in Africa, and so on. We have an active civil society. So we do have the components that can lead to big improvements in Namibian society and in the way that the government operates and is held to account and so on.
Yeah.
And we have political competition. We have elections that might be controversial in some aspects, but they do happen. And you know, that we have elected leaders and so on who have some legitimacy. So I think with all those factors together, it means Namibia still has a positive future.
Yeah.
But we have to just get a lot more serious about taking on some of the challenges. I think we have become complacent. Politically, particularly the political class, has become complacent over the years and hasn't addressed the problems of the country with the necessary urgency. So that's why we have so many laws and policies lying around unimplemented. Or partially implemented, and so many issues that we haven't really tackled properly. You know, so a whole range of things hopefully will get more attention now in the next 5 years with the new government, so that we can actually move forward. But generally, I'm optimistic about Namibia, but we just need to do more. We need to be more focused. We need to be more committed. We need politicians who see themselves as servants of the people, and not servants of themselves or just their political parties.
Yeah.
And if we can get to that point, if we can get more people in positions of power who have genuine integrity, then I think we'll make the progress in fisheries, but also across a number of sectors.
Yeah. So, and lastly, what is the single most important takeaway you want our listeners now to have from this conversation?
Well, I think, you know, support the move for access to information, because information is power. And if we get access to information, we get all this, we know now what's happening in the fishing industry, but still nobody really follows it or takes an interest. The listeners of Eagle FM, for example, then nothing will change. But if people utilize the information that we hope will become available with the access to information law, with government being more proactive on releasing key documents, key information, then together we can use that through civil society, through the labor movement, through the media and so on to get positive changes taking place. But if we're all rather indifferent, so just absorbed in our own lives and complacent, as I said, then nothing much will change. But if we're genuinely involved in pushing for a better Namibia, then I think these things can happen, and they can happen much quicker than perhaps we envisage at the moment.
Mr. Graham, your insights have been incredibly clear and have shed
much needed light on such a critical national issue. We truly appreciate you taking the time to unpack this for us and our listeners. Your work at the IPPR is sparking, you know, important conversation like this. And we are grateful, and we are grateful for your time today. Thank you for coming through today.
No, and thanks to Eagle FM for consistently looking at all these kinds of difficult but really important issues that we have to have national discussions about.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. All right. And that's Mr. Graham Hopwood, the executive director of the IPPR, shedding much needed light on such important documents or policies in our country. So our line will be open, and then you can come through and react to the two stories, two things that we have covered so far. So our telephone number, 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So now you're welcome to come through and have your say. What do you think?
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, morning, Dr. Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
All right. I see you guys are having a lovely weekend, isn't it?
A lovely weekend?
Yeah. What? In Launa City, there was a woman,
there was some kind of a gathering.
Yeah, and there was soccer all over.
We need to entertain ourselves.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So otherwise?
Anything is fine, man. I was just listening also to the gentleman in Crime Hobart.
Yeah.
What he was saying, he set a light on a lot of things, especially when it comes to the policy to give a direction to the what?
The funny thing is this, and that's why I really picked up the Marine Resource Act is exactly, it's untouched for when it's amended, it's still actually the same, and this allow ministers to have that sweeping power to hand out fishing rights, and that's how things came to, and that's how the fishing rod happened, and nothing happened, you know.
Exactly, they're supposed to change it the way it was supposed to be, but now somebody's living on it because they know exactly they're benefiting out of it.
As he said, exactly.
That's why you can see the list is always not published. It doesn't come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise we're supposed to know the list and the beneficial. It never come out. That's why that's why some of us, maybe we are still in that beneficial, but you don't know.
And he said, when you remember? And he said, when you're asking for the fishing rights and who hold the company that hold the fishing rights and quotas, they become defensive.
Yeah, exactly, they will be aggressive mood. That's how it is. It's corruption, my friend. That corruption is still. That's why last time I said, no, what is the use to keep those guys in jail if the fish lot still is happening? Because remember one thing, even the minister was there, Kawana. I think, I don't know who was in the studio who came in, then I even asked the question. What is the use if you are selling to the highest bidder, government objective quotas? What about if I'm a cousin of Sangala or I'm a cousin of Atukulipi?
Yeah.
The fish lot man would be beneficial and then I come in, buy the bid.
Exactly.
Because now we are selling to everybody. You don't know who
even actually selling it to himself just in the name of somebody else.
I'm telling you.
Of a cousin or something like that.
My friend, that's why I'm telling my guy. No. This country is doomed. I'm telling you.
Caught
in the highest order. Because now, remember one thing that up to now, the people who are supposed to even to protect the government, like the gentlemen on the oil lot, is also involved in that fish. It's having out your day. But I'm telling you, up to now, anti-corruption, they are not doing anything. And it look like it's a clean man, but it's not clean. And nobody's saying anything. It's involved, but only people, other people who have been arrested. It's not even been someone in the court.
Yeah.
You see. And these things are still going on. It's what I'm saying. It's higher time if the meme is serious with fighting corruption.
Just hold for a minute. More. Just hold for a second. We'll be back.
All right. Yeah.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
I always love that one. Because you in UNAM is always you. It's a lovely one.
And then they put a lot of students in the street.
Exactly. You see?
Anyway, you see, the thing is that you can't tell us that you in the past 6 years, you were not able to act to elect the police which give it direction to the what when it comes to Marine Resource Act.
Yeah.
You cannot change it. So who's in beneficial? Who's really when it comes to economy? Why does it benefit the economy if individual people are getting rights instead of organization? Because remember one thing, I'm saying we are keeping ourselves poor because look here, even our sport is about to take a lot of people out of streets, but it's not happening because my friend, a person is given a fish right, and this person individually, he doesn't even, not even a soccer ball in the community where he come from, donating or just a Christmas party for the others.
Yeah.
It's just driving his Amarok and whatever he's buying, whatever he wants, and traveling around the country, the world.
Around the world, yeah.
Yeah. You see? And serious, I'm saying this fish supposed to take care of this country. Because I think this only a resource which we have, which we don't need to feed it.
We need to protect it, but.
We just need to protect it.
Yeah.
And even when it comes to protection, we don't protect it that way, supposed to be protected, because we heard a lot of rumors around that, in the marine resource that people have been abusing even the, whatever visa they can come in, to caught Namibian fish, then they go without even getting punished.
Yeah.
Yeah, but serious, I'm telling my friend, we need to act, because this is, as long as the president says it's promises us that it's not going to be business as usual. These are acts that are supposed to be already changed.
Yeah. So
these are things which are need to be put it up there like, you know, there's a lot of things you need to be changed. That's why I'm saying when it comes to law, our law, maybe we need to start from the Peter Sivu Tede, then we come to this in Marwa, then we come to anti-corruption, then we go to judge president. Those people, they need to go. I'm telling you, because once you stay in that place, I mean, the officer for so long, you become also lazy, you become, you see, you just, because you don't have that place anymore.
Yeah, it's an office that needs, now and then, new people coming in. Probably they come with new ideas.
They are not associated
to the some old people that they know. So someone new. It's like when you have a president. It's like when you have a president. When you have a new president, he's come up with new ideas. He started to do certain things differently. Yeah, so it should be. There are certain offices that are very important and crucial.
Telling you, seriously, we need the location.
Yeah.
Because you can't just put a person for more than 10 years, more than 15 years. Those people, they're going up almost like 20 years even.
So more than 30 years. So you lose that creativity and innovation.
Nobody's pushing you.
Yeah.
You know already, just as long as I just got the salary will come. When that didn't finish this project today, I will try if I can squeeze in. Then that's how it is. Because you don't have a press. Somebody pressing you that, you know, if you don't complete this project, I'm going to fire you. Then I will put somebody else there.
Yeah. And there should be that clause that it should be renewable. They should be renewed, but depending on the target, have you met the target that we wanted to, you know, to meet? So if not, then you go.
There are a lot of people. We are saying there are a lot of people in the street who don't have, we have a qualification, but don't have a job. Now, when are we going to give them a chance?
Exactly. Yeah.
And the thing is that you can't tell me some law from 1960, we're still using it.
They're on the shelf.
In the current time, you can see that no, it's got no use.
There are many policies that are just on the shelf. Very nice policies, but you know, and this is the disease that we have in Namibia. And as he talked about, you know, implementation. It's good and well just to.
We talk, my friend. We can talk and talk and nice things, but when it comes to implementation, is the problem. Yeah. I don't know. Who's holding us not to implement anything?
Yeah.
Because you can't tell me, my friend, that up to now, we don't have a protection in what you call it, witness.
Yeah.
But these are crucial because now we have anti-corruption always coming and report. Yeah. What is my protection there? For me? Because these people, they will come for me.
They will.
But
and they are most powerful than you.
Exactly, they are mostly, and it's true, what we see even the things are happening. If a state of authority can see that it's failing even to take one, just one lawyer to challenge it.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of worried if what protection do I have?
And
if these people come after me, you know, I will be seen the one who actually guilty now.
you want to complain even people when people are starting reporting to job. You are saying no, because we don't have a trust on you.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying, the people have been there for 15 years, 10 years. Do you think I'm going to trust that person? Because it's all over, his hand is not clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I later go to report to somebody else, which I know is not going to leave my identity.
Yeah.
Because the moment I walk out of that office of anti-corruption, sometimes there will be like, you already like, supporting you. You already see some callers. Yeah? And the black car which are following you. Come on, man. No. We need your protection. That is a crucial in Namibia, like the countries we're having a lot of higher corruption.
Yeah.
We need it very much.
Exactly.
It means our parliament, they cannot just stand still there because we know even some of our opposition, they are benefiting out of the, even just when it comes to fiscal quotas. Some of them are benefiting. That's why they are quiet about the act.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, but serious, no. Things need to be changed. So we don't have anymore. So at least our people can benefit. Just go to even your hospital now, my friend. There's no medicine. Just simple medicine.
Yeah.
People like heart present, blood present, my friend. How do you want, serious, things are not okay, man, in this country.
Actually, you're talking about medicine. I had 2 days ago, one of my neighbor actually went to the public hospital, and she was actually told there was no medicine. They needed this kind of medicine for the child, and there was no medicine actually at the hospital. So I have to help for the person actually to go and buy.
In the pharmacy.
At the pharmacy.
Expensive. Yeah. I'm telling you.
You see,
and then you have people, a person who just alone there sitting with what?
Yeah.
Is a fish right? Enjoying this moment like you are. Something, people who are living in Namibia like they are living in the very hill.
And there's someone who came up with it. He talked about a very good idea. And I don't know why this is not being implemented. So why can't the government, if they don't have medicine in the hospital, why can't they say, well, go to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy actually bill the government?
Exactly.
The pharmacy should just bill the government.
It can be done like that.
Yeah.
Because now, look, remember one thing that, you know, as long as, it's what I'm always saying, no, our government are not serious, because up to now, we are not supposed to hold this card which we are holding for medical cards. A book. Because now, remember, even the book where they learn out of, you have to go and buy a book, normal book. Which we
Mandume, the honest truth here is that we are not serious about this. If you go to the government and tells you, no, we don't have this medicine, maybe come next week. What if you die in the meantime? We just don't take things very seriously.
I'm telling you, it's what I'm saying.
You can take the government to court.
Yeah. I'm telling you. And it's what I'm thinking of, I'm blaming also this organization which they always come up with, NGO, whatever. Without, we support to have consumer protection against the government, against private. Because now, they are getting away with it. Just remember, the people who are from poor family. These things are happening every day.
You're actually just telling a person. Telling the person, go and die.
Go and die, because there's nothing.
Go and die, there's nothing I can do.
I can do for you. Money missing every day.
Yeah. So let's see if there would be someone else coming
through.
Right. Yeah.
All right, my brother.
Okay, good, great, man.
Ciao.
And that's a very serious thing. We should, and I honestly, and I'm telling you, if you're listening, you know, because the government can't just tell you go home and die, because it's exactly what you're telling that person, that we don't have medication here. Maybe come next week or something like that. What if I die? What if the person die within that week? Eagle FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Bon dia, familia.
Bon dia. Como está?
Ah, tá. Muito bem. Não muito bem, mas estamos mais ou menos. Yeah.
So how are things?
We are doing fine, thank you. We think God, things are not better, not to waste, but we are fine.
Yeah. Sometimes they are just fine where you are. Where other people are terrible, are horrible.
I want to go there. that's where I go. You are touching the issue of the medication in the system, which is not enough, right?
Yeah, no, I was just giving an example of a neighbor of mine. Her child went to the hospital, was not feeling well, and they were told the specific medication that she was supposed to get, but it was not in the hospital. And they were told to maybe come next week or something like that. So what I did, I just actually gave the mother some money, add to what she had, because she didn't have enough to go and buy it from the pharmacy. So the baby, so that they can, at least today, the baby went to school. Today.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was last week, Thursday or so. Huh?
Yeah.
You see? And in that way, the government is telling you, go home and die.
Yeah.
Exactly, and we have to take that very seriously.
They have no neck. I mean, I should meet you.
So you are telling a person go home and die.
Yeah, but you know, when it comes to this kind of our hospitals, but I sometimes don't understand. You know, you have a surgery, or let me say, have a pain somewhere.
Yeah,
you need to go to fill up to go to the list. So you might find that list that system is full. They will tell you for you to come in December. Just imagine now, you are in that pain.
Yeah.
You must wait to December. Because of what? Because of lack of doctors. So what are we doing?
If you die, you must sue the government. If anything happened to that person, you must sue the government. And I'm telling you, you must. Because they cannot tell you must go home. And because technically, that's what they're telling you. Just go home and... Well, and whatever you are going through, you know, and let that happen to you, you know.
But
these are my resources. I pay tax, you know. My mother or my father, my whatever, they pay tax. You should be able to provide this service to me.
And what I don't understand is, like, you must go, like, this state hospital. You have a pain. You're supposed to go to see a doctor. You go and fill up that list, and they'll tell you must come. For example, you're in January. They'll tell you for you to come in December. No, how will I live this with this pain?
Exactly.
I wanted to help, but what needs to be done there? What's totally wrong? Is the lack of doctors or a lack of money? What's the problem there? I don't understand sometimes. Mm-hmm. I just think about what's the problem here if people are really need to queue, like you're going to tell it. You need to queue or buy bread or something like that. You need to queue for you to come in December. You might even forgot to jump out that day. You know, your main thing, you might forgot.
And the worst thing is that it's not that things are getting better. You see, that's the problematic one for me. Things are not getting better. You know, actually, things are getting worse. Those days, you can go to the hospital and you don't, the medication were always there. You know, so they may not be as good as you go to the private, but there was always medications available. Now the medication are not even available. You know, the doctor, you go to a hospital at 8, you come back home, you know, especially in some areas, like if you go to Oshakati or Nanjoko, all these places, you go 8 o'clock, you come back home. Sometimes you come back without even seeing a doctor. You have to go back tomorrow again.
Yeah.
You understand?
These are
things that we need to address year after year, year after year, you know.
But you know, I don't understand, like, because who buy the medication? The state. But now the state doesn't have, but the private is having that medication. How do things work? I don't understand because the state is the one who order this medication for the public.
Yeah.
And now you come to the hospital. There's nothing. They'll tell you to go to the private or to the clinic, to the pharmacy. How that come if the state is the one who bought the medication for the state?
It's the same thing. The doctors, the state doctors are also private doctors. So they're pushing you where they make more money.
That's my issue, because if you think about just money, then you kill the country, because the state order these things for the public, and now you divide it, you put in the private for us when buy this, you know, to put money in your pocket.
All right, we are eating up Tate Francis' time now. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
All right. No, thank you for coming through. Yeah.
All right.
All right. So. You guys always like to come at the end of this when we had a bit of interview there, which was really, really, very good one. And that brings us to the end of our unpacking the day today, this Monday morning. Our time is about 32 minutes past the hour of 9, and that brings us to the end of Unpacking Day. I wish you a very splendid and a productive week ahead. And so stay tuned for Kuthamosha
that is coming now with 30 funds. So from me, Michael Chiavelli, I will see you tomorrow. Let's do this again tomorrow at the same time here on Eagle FM. So goodbye for now.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster.
Sorry, I'm... Oh my goodness, I'm just laughing at myself. I'm supposed to go up to 10 o'clock, yeah. Oh my goodness. I'm still used to the old time. So, all right. So please, please do come through. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, yeah. All right. Sorry for that. I couldn't have even stopped the caller. So, yeah. All right, our time is about 34 minutes past the hour of 9. And, we still have about 26 minutes to go. Please, well, you're most welcome. Come through and, have your comment and, or your reaction to the story that we have covered so far. Where am I? It's a Monday morning. Well, I can be excused. It's a Monday morning. So many things does happen. All right. So our time, it's about 35 minutes past the hour of 9. And, yeah. So, well, do come through. As I said, on what we have covered so far and, what we looked at, we look at the debt marines and the whole question of 15% tariff and how that actually is has got an impact on debt marine and definitely on our economy as a whole. And, we looked at that a little bit in depth. So, and also then we looked at the discussion and interview that I have with Mr. Graham, Hopwood. The executive director of the IPPR, and specifically we were looking at the Marine Resources Act, that hasn't been, you know, which is actually still, largely untouched, that still haven't yet implemented, and, is still holding powers, to hand. Like ministers still have powers to hand over, to hand out fishing rights. And also the whole idea is that the true owners of many, quota holding companies, remain hidden, from public, view. So, yeah. And many other things that we have discussed. So what I'm giving you this minutes, for you to come through and have your reaction.
A very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Sorry, so to come in just for tariff.
Yeah.
2 minutes. Just give me 2 minutes only.
All right.
Yeah. You know, Mike, man. For me, the tariff is that we thought it was a joke when Trump came in to announce that. And we thought maybe it's not going to affect us, but we know already that it will be consequence with. Especially when you are so many in bed with South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, our economy. Because, you know, once South Africa get a flu, or a sneeze, we are the one who are getting the flu.
Yeah.
And this effect, because we are in too much in together when it comes to economy.
It has some benefit, but it also have some, you know, some
consequences
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now we are facing for that. Even it was not our war, we are in. Because now, remember one thing, that the world is all, we need it other. Whether it's America or Russia,
yeah.
Anybody, you say you don't try it or whatever. I'm telling you, the world is all together.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Whether we like it or not.
So,
yeah.
As I said, towards the end of that, I said, one thing I have taken away from this is how we are connected to a global world. So
a decision
taken in Washington D.C. have absolutely impact on your life, on a day to day life here.
I'm telling you,
you
brother, we are sitting there in Atlanta City. We got nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
What is happening there? But I'm telling you, to affect you.
Yeah, it would.
And this affect. But the problem I think we rely on is in Namibia is that we rely on too much on what outsiders instead of our. How many times I complain about it that we don't, when it comes to human resources in Namibia,
yeah,
we are underrating it. It's like we don't care about our people. I'm telling you, these things are supposed to be already like done with, because sometimes outside influence, it can affect you, but just in minimum. But us, anything can come in, we feel the impact of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for sure, because we don't have that human resource in ourselves. We don't trust ourselves. We let that rely on too much people, foreign aid, whatever, anything we are doing.
Mm.
It must be influence from somebody who's come from outside.
It is a problem. And you see that in Africa as well. I mean, many continental meeting, we don't even fund our own meeting.
Exactly.
You know, you find a meeting, a continental meeting taking place where it's funded by the EU or it's funded by American and what.
American,
and you kind of
Chinese. Come on. When are we going to rely on ourselves? That's the problem I think we have. And this is what we are not really developing, because look here, like now, if you go to regions, mostly even, let me say like a big project, they are given to people who are living in Windhoek. But it's in the region, but it's given to the people who are in Windhoek because they are capable of doing it. But we have the people who are surrounding in the village.
But the thing
you
is
can
also
put them together. You can build them a team.
Yeah, but the other thing is also because we make the criteria so only favorable to the people in Windhoek.
That is a problem.
It's the same when you're looking at the bank. The bank, they have money to support SMEs. They do have the money, but the criteria and the things that they're looking for, it's just not fitting. It just doesn't address our people in rural area. It doesn't address your situation.
Let us not go to the bank alone. Go to the even government itself.
Exactly.
Government, they are just looking up to people who are between 18 to 35, and they jump to 60 upward.
Yeah.
Then they leave the gap between 36 to 69. You see, even the way they even come up with this allowance or people are doing business.
Yeah.
Come on. Then they are like, okay, now where does you live with the person who is 36?
Mm.
Who's also doing business, but he's hustling. And 59 years old. He's not yet even dependent.
Many of those, yeah, many of those are laid off. They have no work anymore. And some of those are the one who have been working for years in a certain company. They may not have a qualification, but they have experience.
They have experience.
Everybody's been
affected by Corona, COVID.
Yeah.
And the COVID was not our fault, but our government is lending the people doing business. Now they come up with a ridiculous 18 to 36. I think this is just a way also to eat money again.
All right, man.
All right, let me end up the neighbors.
No, thanks for coming through.
Sure.
All right.
All right. Our telephone number, we are in the Ondangwa studio. Our telephone number is 08333-66091. 08333-66091. What am I saying? 08333-66091. Sometimes you talk and you can't even hear yourself. Okay. All right. That's a number you can call and, we can talk. So, all right. Let's get to another story, which is actually related to the interview that I have. I just give it a little bit of a foundation. I think, what is the ministry actually, is also doing, yeah. So this is the, what is that? The, just hold on. I will get to you now, right now. All right. Okay. So the cabinet. So the one of the big stories, making headlines recently is that the cabinet has, approved tough new rules for our fishing industry. And we, it's kind of like we are getting tough on bycatch. All right. Or bycatch, baycatch. I don't know. When you are from British, bycatch, and from the America, baycatch. I don't know which one is which. All right. So, and if you're not familiar with, what, baycatch is, how can I help you? How can, let me help you with a scenario. All right. Imagine you are a fisherman and your quota, your license, say you are allowed to catch hake. I wish I was one of those. So you are allowed to catch a hake. You cast your massive net into our Atlantic waters. Okay, we have a caller. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, all the managers for media. I want to
say about,
yeah, but not in the year, but I'm wondering.
Yeah.
You spoke about the fish sector. I think three months ago, the government announced like they need to catch these sardines.
Yeah.
The aim is to invest in this. You know, left like behind system, like we have lack of houses and so on.
Yeah.
But now I think they're taking too long. Now I saw like now the fish, if they take long, those fish will move to Angola. why they take so long? I think the fish will disappear.
Yeah, no, and then of course they move, depending on the weather. Yeah, that's also the case. Yeah.
Yeah, things are changing. They are saying like the rumors are coming to say those fish now, if they take longer, they will find out, they'll find themselves in Angola now. So,
but they know, they know exactly how they moves. That's why they said, okay, this is a time now to catch this type of fish. There is a moratorium on this one because they have become too little now. And let's wait until they become more again. So yeah, no, they know how the ocean work, if I can put it that way. Yeah.
But I think that thing now a bit longer for them to do their job because people are suffering. In terms of undeveloped areas, people are still in the same poverty. And if we live on that now, so for example, not everybody having a job or working for a government, working for other big institutions.
Yeah.
But if you have a plot with electricity and water, at least you can do, if you just use your brain and do something.
Yeah, no, that's what we say most of the time. And I understand when people say that do something, if there were in some areas, I mean, if there are opportunities out there and someone said, look, there is this opportunity and that opportunity and you are just sitting at home doing nothing. Yeah. Then one could say, yeah, we have so many people who are sitting at home and there are so many opportunity. It's like, it's just also that opportunity are very thin.
Yes.
Yeah.
they are very, 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 very thin, you know. So you cannot just sit and you can't just be on this side and say, yeah, the people are just lazy. They are not doing anything, you know. The opportunities are also very thin, especially if, and also if, especially if you have people in one specific area. Let's say, for example, I have massive teacher graduate, for example. Now the opportunities of getting a teaching job is very thin for that that person. So now you have maybe someone who come from the VTC and have done mechanics. Now the opportunity being able to go and to put up a, he doesn't have a place where you can even under the tree, when you are found that you are repairing under the tree, the municipality will actually, you know, will chase you away. What are you doing here? You are not supposed to, you understand? So there are so many hurdles that create the situation that we are in.
But in our population now, I don't think we deserve to live in this.
Not at all. There are just those who have more than what they should.
Yeah, because if you think like right now, from here to 20 years, this country will be triple of our volume. So people even gonna live, if they manage it well, they're gonna live even better than today. So what's the problem? So we want now like this kind of. Eliminating these locations, it would be better, be even because for you to live in that system, you are treating your system which your kids would be just a criminal.
Yeah.
Because the name is totally rough, my brother. There is rough. It's very rough. If one toilet is get blocked, you go to queue to the toilet seat, and it's a totally disaster. Now think about all three of you guys having a running stomach.
Do you know the scaring thing?
Yeah.
Just listen to our ministers and leaders are talking.
Mm.
When they talk, I would expect, you know, the one would say next year, or even, you know, whether you are a minister of whatever minister you are, or whether you're official, you are, to say, we are going to put up this and this and this and this and this. But most of the time, they speak in a more suggestive way. You know, we're supposed to, we would have, we, you know, listen to the language.
Mm-hmm.
And it's someone who is in charge, but he's not telling you what is going to be happening.
Yeah.
He's actually talking in a very suggestive way, you know, and that's very scary. Eh? I want to hear that, okay, we have a problems of medicine by in 3 months' time, we are going to solve that. This is how we're going to solve it. Okay? Yeah. So we have a lack of doctors or resources or personnel. So by next year, this is what we're trying to do to make sure that by this time, we have enough in every hospital. You know, that's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Eh? And even up to date, like today, as we are saying, there are people who are waiting to be operated since January. The list is full.
There are no machines. There is only one machine or something like that.
One point one million, but we're still struggling with this small thing.
My dear.
We need the competent people. We need the people who are really honest with the country, you know? But I just have hope on this main things with this alteration of the locations. I want to see how things will go. Maybe it will bring a bit of relief. People are tired, man. I know people, brother. You know, I know people, né, who when I came here, I was a boy in the country city. Today I'm getting older, and I see people who are fine here. They are still the same system up to date.
Yeah, hope is not good enough. Hope we cannot just hope. We want changes. That's what we want.
Some are dying. You know, just imagine this this person you find is elder person. He died. Now he leave the shape to the son. The son will die. He'll die. Then he'll leave. That thing irritates me a lot. I feel pain in guys. I can this kind of thing. This guy is living in the country like the foreigner.
Yeah. So the thing is this, I think the very practical side to this, we can hear, as I said, we can say the right thing and we can all get worked up and think, the changes, there will be changes that is coming and all that. And we should, as you said, we should hope for that. But is there anyone who can have your hands up and said, yes, my life has now improved.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, it has gotten worse. And every day it's getting worse.
You know those all of these street vendors. Some of them they live in ghettos. Now, if you give that person electricity and water, do you think this person gonna run in the ghetto and on the city again?
Mm.
This guy is gonna create a system which are gonna change that his house, the side of this house, so it's for a business.
Yeah.
You know, but now you don't have electricity. You are paying electricity 1,000 per month or 1,000 something, and you don't have water. You know, it's totally, you know, I don't know what kind of life our people are living. It's totally, it's not even a human consumption.
Yeah.
It's totally out of this world.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Our telephone number, 08333-66091, 08333-66091. I would have left you at 9:30. I was packing up already. Well, thanks to my technical person, so I said, hey, hold on. You shouldn't pack yet, you know? All right. So now, I was talking about the cabinet approving the cabinet approved a tough penalties to curb the fisheries bycatch. And I was just actually for those who may not understand what is a bycatch is, as I said, you know, I was giving just a scenario for you to understand what that's all about. So as I said, imagine you're a fisherman or a fisherwoman. So your quota and your license say you are allowed to catch what fish? Hake. Now you cast your massive net into the water, into the Atlantic water, our water, and you troll for hours, and then you pull it up. When you pull it up, you have got your hake. Of course, your hake are there. So good. And beside now that, but inside that net also, you also have young seals, maybe, okay? Maybe you also have few, seabirds, some shark, if you can. You know, the younger ones, you might have also those young sharks. So. Well, let me say a whole lot of other fish you are not supposed to catch. So that's, my friend, is the bycatch. The bycatch. So we can call it the accidental catch, you know, that you have caught. Because when you throw your net, you don't know what you're going to catch. Actually, you just catch whatever you found in the net. So those accidental catch. Now, and that has become a massive problem for the health of the ocean. Okay. So it's wasteful, and it can destroy the marine population that we are trying now to protect. So the government has now stepped in. So they step in. They announce. The announcement came from the Minister of Information, saying cabinet has given a green light. Has given the green light for the Ministry of Fisheries and for the Ministry of Fishery to clamp down, you know, to clamp down and clamp down hard this practice. So now, and here is the plan in a nutshell. So first, a strict new limit. Fishing company can only have 2% of their total catch be bywatch. Their total catch be bywatch. That should be only 2%. Okay. Anything over 2%, they have to forfeit it. Yeah. You have to forfeit it and give it to the government for mahala. And give it to the government for mahala. Second, the penalties, are going way, 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 way up. So the fine for bycatch is jumping from 15% to a massive,
massive 50%. So, wow, that it's quite massive. All right. Now, and the third, they are creating a public list. Think of it as if it's a wall of shame. Okay. A wall of shame. Yeah, if you want. Okay. So I'm just trying to be creative here. A wall of shame, naming every company that, breaks these rules. So the company that are breaking rules, they will be on this wall of shame. So in the repeated offenders, they could even lose their license to fish in our waters forever. Now, it all sounds good. Sounds good, right? So it sounds like we are finally taking the health of our ocean seriously. So, but remember, here is unpacking the day. So here is unpacking, and we don't just read the report and the press release. We ask the hard questions. We ask the hard questions. But unfortunately, so we don't have time anymore to go into that. I will come back to this tomorrow because it's very important. I want you to, this is a very important, thing. I will come back to, I will start with this tomorrow and give a summary of what we covered so far and then come to this point because I think, I think it's very, very important for us to understand. Okay. What are the issue with even the policies that they are being put in place. So for that you get a broader understanding, what are the implications and what is maybe the policies missing, you know? So we will do that tomorrow. At least now, it's 10 o'clock. I can rightly now say goodbye. So we then come to the end of unpacking the day. And as I said earlier, make sure that you make, you know, you book your seat again for tomorrow. So here on Eagle FM and definitely on unpacking the day. So I will leave you in capable hand of Mr. Franz. So coming up with Kutha Mosha. Please stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, Imatina, Omjo, Chicago Shafasa, Nana, Longeshifa, Yai, Shuikemoshiwana, Iamoyao, Otaingo Samweni, Anageshifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangeka, Seithanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongeshifa, Yokupitramo, Eagle FM Media House, Gwe 20 Pimimeha, Ukakombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa zetu. Moambo, dengira selma, onara heta tuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oliyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you see...